Welcome in to Rover Sports. We are here. We are live. 555 Bala Studios, and we have a very special show on deck today. One of our old pals is sitting right here in studio. J-Doc, Joe Dougherty, is right here. And Joe, it's a pleasure to be with you again and to be talking sports here on Rover. The doc should be joining us soon. That is Dr. Bruce. And Doc, it's great to see you.
Well, it's great to be here, Spencer. Love being with you, my friend. Long time we spent together on fans interference, and now we've upgraded to Rover Sports and a lot of things going on. Love the sports doc, Bruce Grossinger, and lots to talk about, man. Lots to talk about.
Absolutely. There's a ton to talk about in the world of sports. The 76ers got eliminated, so that's kind of been a void, because I don't know about you, but I was really enjoying watching the playoffs and having that to look forward to each night.
Oh, yeah, me too, no question. It was a weird playoff series, and I can say this. Eventually, they were overmatched, I believe, with the Heat. And you can see right now, it's been the craziest playoff series. I mean, really, the whole playoff season has been nuts. You know, you got Golden State and Dallas and of course, Miami and Boston. And I've never seen in my entire life games go back and forth, losing by 25, winning by 25. Teams are, getting blown out. You go, Boston gets blown out on their home court, in the first game in Boston. And of course, they come back to blow out the Heat last night. Just incredible. A lot of fun to watch, but still a little confusing. I'm glad I'm not betting on it because, my God.
Yeah, because you would have expected Boston after game two when they got Marcus Smart and Horford back.
Sure.
Game three, the Miami Heat were able to just blitz them from the start and be up by a large margin. But I'll tell you why I think the blowouts are happening. It's a game every other day. So these teams are fatigued. These teams are hurt, getting worn down. The officiating's so different. So Miami loves to play physical basketball. They love to rough up the Celtics. The Celtics are more of a finesse shooting team, better offense.
Sure.
But in game three, the refs let Miami play a game that was like football, that was more like 90s basketball. I enjoyed the physicality of it. But in game four, it wasn't that way. So in these playoffs, like, Chris Paul's an older guy who's 38 years old, and I believe the Suns were a really good team, but playing every other day for Chris Paul after going 82 games for the Phoenix Suns and really, playing really tough every night in the regular season, he just got worn down. I think these players are getting worn down because the schedule is just brutal
on
these
guys.
It is brutal.
It's intense. They're playing every other night, like you said, and then they got the one off day when they're flying. I mean, it is intense. And as far as Chris Paul goes, it just seems to me like, I mean, of course he's a great player. He's a Hall of Famer. But when it gets down to the nitty gritty, okay, I mean, he chokes. I believe, unfortunately, in the playoffs he chokes. And as a result, they lose the big one last year, and this year they don't get to the big one. So
yeah, it's just finishing the task, and I still think like he's a tremendous player.
He is a tremendous player.
It's so hard to win it all, and he's at this older age now, and maybe he's to the point where he can't lead a championship. He needs somebody else to be there to catapult him over the top. But you look at even Clayton Kershaw, I guess, in baseball, when he was able to break it.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning, when you're able to break it, Andy Reid in football.
Yeah.
Imagine Andy Reid not winning that Super Bowl and then being up like he was this past year and the Bengals coming back.
Yeah, I mean, look, those individuals that you talked about, obviously Kershaw, Andy Reid, it was great to see them finally win the big one. Like you mentioned, though, basketball, especially the playoffs, man, I mean, they're the most intense season. They're playing every other day. It's, he's 37 now, Chris Paul. The clock has been ticking for him. Last year was his year, I thought. And at the end of the day, I don't think he's got one more chance at best, And if he doesn't do it next year, it's never going to happen.
I agree. And it's going to be really tough with the way that Golden State is playing. But you know what's so interesting about the playoffs is, like, James Harden in game four, we all remember, you know, game four, and Harden scores 30 and this city's ready to explode and it's 2-2. And it's and James Harden, we're finally feeling the love from the trade.
Sure.
And then James Harden, he's kind of older, his body, and Embiid the same way. They're playing Tuesday night. It feels like that game was 2 hours from James Harden. So Harden had that moment. And then we all know what happened on Tuesday.
Yeah.
They lost by 30.
Yeah.
And everything was gone. And Harden just couldn't sustain. And I welcome, you know, Dr. Bruce. He's arrived here, Dr. Bruce Grossinger. And we're talking about, we're talking sports doc. We're talking about these playoffs and the volatility. And you mentioned that last night with the Boston Celtics and the Heat, and how these games are 20-point swings and how they're blowouts from the get-go, and how there's no consistency, really, it seems like, in these playoffs, or no close finishes.
Yeah, I think that's the detriment of the NBA. They can't really help it, but they're somewhat unpredictable. But just looking at the playoffs, certainly here in Philadelphia, the last two games were really disappointing, and that left a terrible taste in everybody's mouth. And we're very excited. After last year, they traded, got rid of Ben Simmons finally, which was a great thing. And in James Harden, we expected a lot. But the fact he took two shots in the last three quarters, obviously, there's no escaping that. When he choked when he played for the Houston Rockets, and I always thought, you know, I was the biggest defender of Harden, that I said he's different. It'll be different now. That he, coming to the Sixers, this is where he wants to be. He didn't want to be in Houston, didn't want to be in Brooklyn. He's reunited with Daryl Morey, and he loves being in the city. And just the excuse he used, just we'll always go back to Philly, the excuse he used is, the ball didn't come back to me.
Yeah.
So could you imagine Magic Johnson, Larry Bird?
Larry Bird, I was just going to say, the ball didn't come back to me.
Can you imagine Michael Jordan?
Yeah.
Like, imagine Michael Jordan taking two shots, and his excuse was, you know, I would have liked to have done more in a 30-point blowout, but the ball didn't come back to me.
Yeah.
He would have grabbed somebody by the neck.
Yeah.
And the ball would have come back to him. So
right.
I believe it's dysfunctional, and I think a lot of it starts with the coach, you know. And again, I expect a lot of Doc Rivers, you know, especially here in Philly, you know, we want an alternative. So we got Brett Brown, who is like a complete
carnival.
Can't
barker.
Say that word on the air, I guess. No, he was kind of like a soft, like baby
right,
soft.
He was like a suck up.
He was a nice guy. Like, the reason Jimmy Butler left, the reason J.J. Redick left, is because there was no structure at all. There was no film review. There was nothing. It was a complete joke with Brett Brown, and he was like a complete puppet of ownership. And through he was a great tanking coach because he pretty much was there. And when you got Doc Rivers, you figured he seems better. Like his persona, you got an NBA veteran,
championship,
played the game. He has won championship, and we expected a lot. And it reminds me of the song I just heard by The Who the other night, "Won't Get Fooled Again." It's the same thing over and over. But we did get fooled again, and I guess, you know, we're talking about NBA playoffs, but it comes back to the point whether, and I was driving in, I like to listen to sports radio, and a lot of the hosts of sports radio here in Philadelphia, the two major FM stations, believe that Doc Rivers will not be here somehow, despite the recommendation by Daryl Morey saying, "Oh, we love him; he's a great coach." So let's throw that around.
Yeah, it just seems, Joe, and I want to get your thoughts. It seems like if the team wanted to move on from Doc, it seems that just firing him would have been more simple because the Lakers don't have a first-round pick.
Right.
So I guess if they're so desperate, they'll give up a second-round pick. I mean, I'm not even sure how that works.
Has a coach ever been traded before?
I think Doc himself was traded, wasn't he?
I think that
never heard of him.
It might have been a long time ago.
Wasn't Doc traded, actually?
From the Celtics?
Just need more sound there.
Is that Mike Vito we're talking to?
We're talking Michael.
And Mike Vito's going to be joining us.
Mike Vito.
we're trying to hear, Mike. And
I've never heard who do you trade a draft choice or something like that. Why don't you just sell them, for crying out loud, or just let them go?
Exactly. And also, you're also.
I guess if you can get something.
But Joe, here's the thing: is that there's other coaching vacancies, so you could have this time to be looking for your next coach, Doc. That's the thing I don't understand: is that if you fire him now, you get to look for your next replacement. So what's the point of having him at bay here?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I guess it's the issue we want to go around is who, you know, what are the problems with Doc Rivers? Let's drill into it. And who would we like to have? There's talk about Mike D'Antoni. Apparently, Maury, the same way he loves James Harden, he has the same fondness for Mike D'Antoni. When I think of Mike D'Antoni, I think of a guy who's all offense, not that much defense. He plays very well in the West, but when I look at the Eastern Conference Finals, I am now, I'm impressed. You're seeing a war. It's almost like watching football.
Yeah.
And a Mike D'Antoni, I think, will be ill-equipped to make much of a difference.
If you could have one coach of your choice, who would it be?
For me, it would be very easy.
Me too.
A guy named Mr. Jay Wright.
Jay Wright.
Would be my first choice.
Exactly right.
And he's available. He lives in Philly. He's beloved by everybody. In fact, he's probably beloved by everybody across the nation. I don't think there's a bad – you don't hear a bad word about Jay Wright. And he's living right here. And, we'll get into the second topic we're going to talk about is NIL, which is when we talk about paying college players. That's something – we don't have to get too technical about how much money they're making. But we're going to get to that point. But let me ask you, just curious, Spencer, mm-hmm. and Doc, of course, mm-hmm. To talk about, first, let me give you a little station ID here. We are 860 AM. We are 97.5 HD2. We will eventually be on Bruce Grossinger Facebook when I get set up here. But we are, of course, a WWDB. We are grateful to have as our guest host today, Joe Dougherty. Reuniting the old fans interference team. It's like the old OJ glove. It fits, but we don't have to acquit. And of course, Michael Vito is here. And in the absence of Dr. Lewis is attending a dinner. And Coach Dace, I think, is he doing something with baseball? Is he coaching a varsity baseball team? So we're so glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. Filling in.
Well, you're always welcome. We always have that fifth seat.
Yeah.
And in our regards to everybody, a shout out to Tony Schuler, a shout out to Krause.
Yeah.
Joe's the one who taught us. Joe Krause taught us everything we know. We wouldn't even have a show if it wasn't for him. We wouldn't have learned anything. But it's great to see you. So let me ask you this, Joe. Just your frank assessment about the other Doc Rivers.
Sure.
What do you see are his strengths and weaknesses, and how does he stack up for you?
Well, you know, Doc is, you know, I love his intensity. I love the fact that, you know, he's a player's coach. I think he lets them play too much. I've seen too many times this year, and we've all seen it when, you know, he could have slowed it down. And he, you know, went a couple of them times. What was that one? The one game we were up by 27 or 26, and he just let him play. And in my opinion, mismanaged that game. And I think in some cases he could be a little bit more hands on, and he could, you know, strategize a little bit when it comes to, you know, just when the momentum switches. He lets them play, and I get it. But my thought process is. He should be more hands-on at that point. Remember the one game where he said, you know, the reporter said, "Do you blame yourself?" And he said, "I deserve more respect than that." But the reality is, listen, he's a great basketball man. He's beloved by men. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. But at the same time, I think he's got to get more involved in defensive strategy. I think he lets them play too much. And when things are going the opposite, when things are going downhill, he needs to slow it up. He's got to be able to get more involved in the game. He's got to, you know, and he does it. And that cost us more than several games this year. So that's, you know, look, I mean, I would have no problem, you know, holding on to Doc. But at the same time, you know, he's an old dog. So, I mean, you know, you see what you're going to get. And we have some strategical problems with that team. I believe we need some more power underneath of the basket. I believe we need a big man to support Embiid. We need some big guys that can, you know, play defense under the basket.
Yeah, I don't love the way the team is being built, because the bench is just not productive. We don't have enough forwards. I mean, I know that we have Paul Reed, but Bassey's not really being developed or really thin at so many areas. So I'm in favor of looking at options, you know, whether it's like Tobias Harris possibly, getting you some players. I know that Maxey is going to be here in the fold. It's a shame, because I want to build through the draft and I want to have a long-term solution. And with Doc, I'm not sure how creative he is on offense. It's usually trying to give the ball to his stars, but I want him to scheme up some simple hitters, some simple threes, and get the ball swinging side to side and play to a style. And I'm not really sure what Doc's style is. I mean, I think that defensively, Doc tries to build toughness, and Embiid has had the toughness. Maxey has toughness, but the entire team, it's just not there.
Yeah.
And it just seems like with Harden, the way that the team quit the last two games, it seems like his voice is getting tiring. And Doc Rivers, even with the media, he seems aggravated. He doesn't seem jovial. He doesn't seem like he enjoys, you know, coaching here. And he's not smiling. He's not upbeat. And the team reflects Doc's personality, which is just flat. And that was so embarrassing. And you even have national media guys that don't even watch the Sixers all the time can watch that game 6 at Miami. There was no fight at all. So this culture is not great, and that reflects the coach, and that reflects the voice of the coach.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, they need more depth also. First of all, Embiid, we know, was beat up beyond belief. And it still ticks me off, getting that cheap shot to break his orbital bone. And at that point, at the end of it, now look,
Siakam.
Now I get it. They said that how many minutes were left in that game, 6 or 4?
How many minutes, you know?
How many minutes were left in the game? I think it was 4 minutes.
Right. And so, of course, everybody was coming on the dock. You know, you should have took everybody out. But his answer was, well, we didn't have, nobody emptied the benches yet. It was about, you know, we were going to do it. And no one expected that to happen. But to me personally, obviously that was a big effect. But also the fact that Harden's just not shooting. He's not the same player as now. I think he's a nice point guard, and he's an incredible passer. But passing in other words, if you're not a threat to shoot, then the pass is less effective. Although he's just not the player he was, obviously.
No. And
he's got a $47 million option. What do you think about that, Doc? A $47 million player option.
Yeah, I mean, you can't like that. There's no way you could like it. When he came here, I was thinking that James Harden would be the James Harden of old. And just moving, we're just going to have Doc hit – start
here
if you could, because the
hit
way
the blue
just live. Hit the blue start there, and we're gonna go live.
Yep,
and there we go. So that's just
I think it's worth, yes, it's perfect.
So for those on radio, we are just going to another modality, which is Bruce Krosinger Facebook, and you'll see Spencer, myself, and you'll hear we've got an audio external speaker, otherwise known as headphones, to hear our fearless leader, Mike Vito, and, of course, Joe Doc.
I love the fact that I'm on this side of the camera. That's why I do radio in the first place.
Well, there's always the Steve Lewis button, which is the button that Dr. Lewis will use when he's talking. He will hit that button and flip it so they can see your beautiful mug, Joe Doc.
I like this. I love this. This is perfect.
But
you guys look great.
Well, we appreciate that. And we're just seeing if this actually does pop up. And wow, that's exciting.
And it's perfect.
It is perfect. So what we wanted to talk about really is what the Sixers need to do in the offseason.
Yeah.
While we're on that topic, and then from there, we're going to talk about what's actually going on in both Eastern and Western Conference Finals. So let's hear your view firstly. So you're the king of the world. You're Daryl Morey. You're Josh Harris, Spence.
Yeah.
You know, as you said, you're locked into that $47 million. James Harden, nobody in their right mind wouldn't take $47 million for a year. And the fact is that the thought is, if you wanted to, let's say Harden played great in the playoffs, you might have said, hey, James, we'll give you $30 million a year or something, but we'll do that for 4 years. That's a lot of money. Okay, that's you know, going into numbers. But in this case, a lot of people like myself are thinking, show me state of Missouri. You're locked into the 47. Show me what you're doing. And maybe halfway through the season, if he's great, if he's the old hearted. And again, he's talked about it. He's saying, I've been injured for 2 years. All I've done is rehab. I haven't started really training and working on my game. I've just been recovering from injury. So that's an excuse. You know, of course it's a good excuse. But if he has, let's say, halfway into the season, 40 games, he's the James Harden of old, then you say, okay, I'll extend you. We'll give you a 3-year deal, and we basically roll in this, and you do it maybe for $90 million or $100 million, and you extend him, and he'll make more money. But again, if he's the same Harden we saw at the end of the season and during the playoffs, he's basically an old slow dog.
Right.
You know, he's Jeff Ruland. You know, he is the guy who came in with the knee problem.
Jeff Ruland.
Remember, well, Jeff
Ruland. Chris Webber?
No, the guy who
Bynum?
Bynum. Bynum is the ultimate guy.
Andrew Bynum.
You signed Andrew Bynum, never played a minute. And if he's like pre-Andrew Bynum or somebody who's just the end of his career, then you take your medicine and release him at the end, or try to trade him and get something for him. But as far as the makeup of this team, Doc, what I don't see is any grit. I don't see any toughness.
Yeah.
I don't see Patrick Beverley. I don't see Tucker and the other guy, the third tough guy. I don't see Marcus. I don't see Marcus Smart.
Well, first of all, Tobias Harris disappeared.
He's a guy, we call him Silent T here. And the guy who sits in that chair is the least supportive of Tobias Harris, Coach Dage, and he's maddeningly inconsistent at times. Even in the playoffs, in the beginning of the Miami Heat series, he's one of the few guys that showed up in those first two games.
He did, but I'm talking about the fact is he's hitting the boards. I mean, we need some really gritty power players. We need some some toughness. And he did play some great defense in the one game, but I just feel like we really need somebody. We need some toughness under the basket. But, right? We need you look at a number of these other teams, and we just need some toughness.
I feel like Tobias Harris, I would even be curious to see if he could send Tobias Harris to a contending team.
He's got a max deal.
He has a $37 million, so you're going to have to find a team that – is willing to that is kind of close to winning a championship. Maybe you look at the Utah Jazz and you have to find terrible other contracts like Mike Conley, who's older. You have to find maybe Kemba Walker. I know Russell. What the problem with the Lakers and Westbrook is they're overpaying Westbrook, but they don't have any draft picks. So I would take on a terrible contract in order to get some draft. I'm trying to get draft capital to rebuild this team. With toughness, with length defensively. I want to find a forward that really plays with defense. This team needs youth. And you look at Harden, who's older. Tobias Harris is older as well. Danny Green and Niang have nothing really left to offer you in terms of driving to the basket. So I'll tell you what, I want to get draft picks and I want to get younger. And Tobias Harris, to me, his value is still high enough, Doc, because he did play decently in these playoffs.
But you know what's interesting?
So we can deal him. He's the one guy you can deal, because you're not going to deal Harden. Embiid, I don't think that they're going to deal Embiid or Maxey. And Feibel,
Feibel's value is too low because offensively he's shown you nothing.
Yeah, and he showed us even less than nothing in the playoffs. He just disappeared. After he didn't make the trip to Toronto, all of a sudden he just completely disappeared. But I also want to say this.
Yeah.
You talk about the draft and rebuilding in the draft, and it's you know, when you look at Ben Simmons and you look at Markelle Fultz, those two picks are going to put us back a decade, man. You know, you look at Tatum, okay, and everybody in Philly looks at Tatum and gets sick to their stomach, right, because they see that obviously we could have had him. But those two draft picks, okay, imagine if Karma, you know, if Karma played in it. We had two number one draft choices, okay? I personally do not think Ben Simmons is ever going to play again, and I mean
it's
ever.
Funny because you and I never spoke about this, you know. We're very close. But that independently, I formulated the same opinion. And it's much like there's certain people out there, even in the even work injuries. You know, there are people we know who are young and they have work injuries and they have back surgery and they never get back to working. And with him, again, I'm not going to disparage the workers because so many workers come back. But we do see an element of workers who they either hated to work.
Right.
Or they hated their boss, and that happens. And when you get surgery, it could give you a ticket to disability. And I believe that Ben Simmons, with that herniated disc and with that surgery, gives him a ticket to disability. And I don't believe that he ever. And I believe that there is something wrong with the guy mentally. There are a few screws loose in him because he played here for years. And we supported him for 4 years. It's not like that. Like we always dogged the guy. Up until the very last time where he did dunk that ball, the Philly fans here supported him unconditionally. We cheered every free throw that he made. Even if he'd throw a three-pointer and miss it, this team in this city supports people that try. We support effort, right, Doc?
Absolutely.
And we supported him. And for him to throw the whole city under the bus, to throw Doc Rivers under the bus, it shows you he's morally bankrupt.
Well, here's a good.
And you can see what happened in Brooklyn too. He we'll talk about Simmons. He could have at least sat on the darn bench.
Yeah.
He could have gotten into the garbage time. They were down. They were going to lose. They were down 3-0, I guess. They're never going to win. But if he even came to the game and suited up and stood in the corner
for the Nets,
at least the Nets, he would have showed the players on his team. He would have showed the fans of the Brooklyn Nets, hey, I'm getting a max deal, and I want to play. And he could have done it. And you know what? Nothing really happened to him. He had his herniated disc here in Philly. We were able to unload him. Remember they said he had a pinched nerve? I'm being a neurologist. I always said, what's his MRI show? And I'm sure it showed a herniated disc.
And Doc, you know what I'm curious about? Is in the players' collective bargaining agreement, I wonder if the commissioner...
That's going to be changes.
I'm saying if a player like Ben Simmons, it's very tough to challenge someone's injury, but if there's a way that he would lose his money if he just elected not to play because he basically was not playing and he was letting everybody down. And how come his teammates, how come Steve Nash and Doc Rivers, you can also get on Doc Rivers a little bit for this. It's like Doc Rivers and the Sixers should have, I guess they tried to communicate with Ben Simmons, but why couldn't they publicly state that we're trying to get Ben Simmons to play? And when you have your number one player and you miss 17 points and 8 assists of production, your team is not going to be that good. And Ben Simmons in the playoffs was never that great. But in the regular season, when it's wide open basketball and there's minimal defense, he's effective.
Yeah, but you know... I just looked. I'm looking at the Phillies roster, right? And I'll give you an example. I've been saying this that Ben Simmons doesn't realize this. Alec Bohm, remember about 2-3 weeks ago when he said he hated this bleeping place?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
What
he could have checked out.
Right. He apologized afterwards. Came out next
the
day.
The same day, and within an hour later,
yeah.
He being a mature guy who has that emotional maturity,
right?
Like you say, Doc. Alec Bohm came out.
He manned up.
He didn't deny it, even though it was just lip reading.
Yeah.
You know, you could imagine, you played sports a lot. If they read our lips, like when I played hockey, you played football. If they read my lips, you know, if I made a bad play and the home fans booed him to that extent
yeah.
and booed three errors, the fact is he manned up. And he came back, and what did the Phillies, what did they do the next night? What did the Phillies, they gave him a standing
ovation.
That's right,
and he didn't play particularly great. He just came out and stuck his chin up and manned up, and the Philly fans, one thing Ben Simmons doesn't know.
And I loved it, too.
If he would have came out, hits one shot. I mean, Philly, yes, we're brutal when it comes to our sports and our expectations, but we're also forgiving. I don't care what anybody says. You know, you look at some of the all-time GOATs in Philly who left like this. Obviously, Ben Simmons, top of the list. You look at...
He's at top of the list. In other words, as far as the when we say GOATs, not the greatest of all time.
No, the right. People, not the opposite.
He would be in the J.D. Drew. We drafted him as a first-round pick. He had Scott Boras. He wasn't coming here. We threw all kinds of money at him. And basically, by us losing that first-round pick with J.D. Drew, when Scott Rowland, who was a third baseman, at one point loved this city, and then he just left and he turned his back on the city. He went to St. Louis. Like, you can think of guys that left the city in disgrace.
I can.
And J.D. Drew, we hated J.D. Drew.
How about Donovan McNabb going to the...
Not at all. You can't even put him in the same category.
Not Donovan.
Donovan McNabb gave everything he had to the city. Now, again... He wasn't embraced here. He was kind of a Chicago guy.
Right. Do you think his favorability was high?
But that wasn't
necessarily
his fault.
He wasn't love and embraced. Well, no, because in the Super Bowl he didn't he sometimes was aloof and he didn't get along with a star receiver in Terrell Owens and he never really embraced the city either. So
well, here's the thing about Donovan McNabb. One of the issues, of course, the Super Bowl. And throwing up in a Super Bowl. But the other thing is this. Once the honeymoon ended, okay, and we realized we weren't getting a Super Bowl, and he's 10 years in, there was nothing he could do, right? It was like Andy Reid. Once we realized that it wasn't happening, mm-hmm. Everything that could have gone wrong was going to go wrong, and every mistake was going to be magnified. But you look at the GOATs, and I don't mean GOATs in like Bruce said.
Not the greatest. We're talking about guys who are GOATs.
The GOATs, you know.
We could use the word
worst.
Asses.
The worst.
You can actually use that word on radio now. Yeah, right. Asses.
Yeah. Whatever you
We didn't used to be able to use the word. But the guy who is the loser, whatever negative word, there's nobody in my recollection who's come close to Ben Simmons.
Well, Ben Simmons,
do you remember anything like this?
If you look at the players that were revered then left, of course, Ben Simmons number one. I'll throw Markelle Fultz in there. He was one of the freakiest. I don't know what the heck happened to that dude, man. He was like as freaky as anything, and then he all of a sudden he could play once he left, but not. Just an average player.
One of the biggest busts as a number one pick.
In the history of all time. Having said that, Eric Lindros, when he left, he was outstanding for so long, and we loved him and all that. But once he turned sour, he wanted to go. Scott Rowland, no question about it. I'm thinking of some other individuals.
Do you think Howard? Howard?
No.
Ryan Howard was hurt. No, not even close. In other words, you have to think of somebody who just basically told Philadelphia that he hated them. In fact, this guy, Simmons, is so brazen to put in a claim, they actually sued the Sixers for $20 million. This guy wouldn't even show up in practice and sit on the bench, yet he'd go right here across the street here, Doc. He'd go to St. Joe and practice. He went to the Fiddler
Club.
You know that fancy, place. Yeah. You and I could never walk into that place.
No.
They would remove us with a
coat
hanger.
Let's talk about
guys. You would never go there. But Ben Simmons went there to practice. So this guy would do anything. He'd bring a mental health problem. Mm-hmm. He would be low back pain. And he would sue this city. So I don't think of anybody who has turned their back, stabbed Philly in the back after supporting him for years like Ben Simmons. And now he's doing the same thing in Brooklyn. He won't even show up.
Well, I know a couple of
I don't think he's
going to
play.
Give us some other names. All-time dogs. Club dogs. Dogs is a good word.
Namdi Asomugha.
He came here with such high
expectations.
But he just was bad. We're not talking guys that showed up and were really bad.
How about
Rager?
I'll tell you a lazy player that had some expectation that was very poor and that was just kind of lazy is Chris Webber when he was on the Sixers.
He was also he had bad knees by the time he got here.
You know what's interesting about Webber? Do you remember exactly what happened? I'll remember Webber very well. Webber came here and he dogged it. Okay. Webber was purported to be injured. He was going to movies. This is when you had movie theaters before COVID. He was just going to movie theaters and bowling alleys. He was bowling just like Bynum. Somehow these guys, they love bowling. So he was basically just bowling. And the bowling fact of the matter is, when the playoffs came, the Sixers, I think, traded him for was maybe there were five rounds. Basically released him or traded him. But Weber showed up and played for his new team and played every game in the playoffs. So that's a dog. He's on my list of dogs. And the fact that he came here, refused to play, and all of a sudden went to another team and immediately played in the playoffs. So that left a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, and then there's coaches as well. But we have on a call. We actually have a caller.
Not just any caller.
Yeah,
we have
just a regular caller.
We have Rover. We have Coach Daish, the original Tough Mudder. And I'm going to try to turn up my external speaker now. Coach, welcome to Rover Sports. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Doc. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Talk as loud as you can because we're trying to make sure we amplify your voice so you can hear you on Facebook as well.
Thanks for having me tonight. Yeah, it's interesting you're talking about dogs that have come in and fleeced Philadelphia. Obviously, you know, Ben Simmons is probably the worst of the worst, but there's so many of them out there. I heard you mention Bynum. You know, Matt Geiger, sitting on the bench for a long period of time, was another one. I think he's still getting paid. Like, he's like the Bobby Bonilla.
He's still getting paid, right? Yeah. Geiger is certainly in the dog category.
Josh, I would also say the kid from Oregon, Josh Huff, who drove 100 miles per hour over a bridge near endangering people. He left the city in kind of disgrace. I would say Aguilar, like him balling on the Raiders, like I would say Aguilar might be in that discussion too.
I don't put him in the discussion. I'll tell you why. I believe Aguilar was nowhere near Ben Simmons. Here's the point. He had a problem. He probably had a mental problem with catching the ball. Like, there's people with real mental problems, like Mackie Sasser. He was on the Mets. You and I remember. Could not throw the ball back to the pitcher. He left. Bob Moose was a great player for the Pirates. Forgot how to pitch. Had an ERA over 10. He left. So, look at Huff. Like, that's bad judgment. You know, you look at guys like Aguilar. Some people just need a change. But Aguilar showed up at every practice. He wasn't a prima donna. He shorted some girl at cheerleaders. You know, he should have paid $400 for the couch stands, paid $200. She didn't like that. But I don't put them in anywhere. I'm looking at the fact that they hate the city and refuse to show up. So, well, Coach, you've been here a while. Anybody else? I mentioned J.D. Drew. Scott Rowland really hated the city and went out. He basically gave a middle finger to the city. Who? Anybody else we can think of? There's nobody who could surpass Ben Simmons. But anybody else in your mind?
You know, it's drawing a blank. I'm sure. Actually, as I get off the phone, I'll be thinking of like 10 or 11 people.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure there's people. Say hi to Joe Doc. He's a great guy. And,
hey, Coach.
And Coach Daish. I'm sure you guys have seen each other.
I'm
admire
keeping
your work.
Your seat warm here, Big Daddy.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Doc. Last summer, you were fortunate to get me out to play with Seth Joyner. I asked Seth, how hard of a town is it to play in Philadelphia? And he says, Josh, it's extremely hard. Everyone's a diehard sports fan. You know, the bar is pretty high up here, and a lot of guys can't live up to it. And it's easy to go to a city like Orlando where, you know what, everyone's more fascinated by going to Disney World than watching the Orlando Magic games. That Markelle Fultz can play. It really is.
If you're going to Orlando, it's like going to the Witness Protection Program. There's probably one sports reporter, and again, you haven't even heard of him. Fultz has had minor like soft tissue injuries and stuff, but he didn't drop out entirely. I think did he finish the season? I don't even know.
He's just been such a non-factor.
He's a complete
even
non-factor
for the Orlando Magic, and the Magic have the first pick. You know, they have Wagner who can really play, Jalen Suggs. So their team's turning it around, and Markelle Fultz is just completely forgotten
as marginalized,
a player.
Irrelevant. You know, when we talk about what the Sixers need to do, Coach Daish, wouldn't you say that? You're certainly a proponent of having Doc Rivers leave. Speak to that.
Oh, I would love it. I would love if Doc Rivers left. I mean, he's been the most arrogant coach, I think, in the city of Philadelphia in a long time. He's not good. He covers up for his players. He never held anybody accountable. He himself is never held accountable. You know, and from what I understand, I heard on a sports radio show. Oh, Doc, I got to take this call. I'm sorry, it's work. But, yeah.
You're actually working. We're having fun here on the air. Coach Dace, thanks for logging into Rover Sports. We'll hopefully see you next week.
All right, yep. So
dovetailing on what you were saying.
So he was looking at Doc Rivers, and the one thing I'm going to ask you guys is, we all bring up the coach that coached the college team here, Jay Wright, as trying to fit onto the NBA. But the track record of guys going from college to the NBA, it isn't exactly tremendous. We had Rick Pitino go to the NBA for a year, and then we also had John Beilein, and for Jay Wright, he can mold 18-year-olds and make them play the way that they want to play. But when you look at Jay Wright and you have Harden who's making 47, you have Tobias Harris that's making 38, these are guys that are in their 30s that are making three times the salary of a college coach. It's very difficult. It's a completely different dynamic with relating to guys in the professional realm than coaching college basketball, where these players are all theoretically making, you know, minimum amounts of money, and you can switch lineups, and the politics of who to play is so different for these college coaches, and how, and it's tough to coach these guys extremely hard in the NBA and teach them fundamentals like Jay Wright did. So that's something to consider with Jay Wright as a college coach.
So let's see. My own opinion, Doc, and I'm interested in yours, is that Jay Wright left here for two reasons: the transfer portal and the NIL. Basically, the NIL, and we'll talk a little bit about it, involves it's going to the Wild West. It means that groups of boosters could basically pull their money together and buy the most elite high school players. They could buy great players and maybe buy a championship. And this really blew up in the last week, obviously, between Jimbo Fisher at A&M and also Nick Saban, who's the godfather. The last 10 years, Alabama was number one recruiting class because they're Alabama. And it was, if you like, socialism in the sense that nobody could pay any players. So Alabama was the marquee. Nick Saban, this is the premium, the platinum program. And you knew that if you went to Alabama, you're going to get the best look at coming to the NFL. And almost guarantee, if you're a great player, that it's a factory. It's a feeder factory for the NFL. That's what Alabama is. But now all of a sudden, with NIL, teams like Jackson State, with Neon Deion, he actually got a great player. And also,
Travis Hunter, actually.
Yeah, there's no way Travis Hunter would go to Jackson State.
And Barstool,
if he wasn't
was
monetarily incentivized. I don't care if it's Deion Sanders or God Almighty, he wouldn't go there.
No, I agree.
So the fact is, the Coach Wright was able to establish really a premium blue blood market right here in the outskirts of Philly, in Villanova, in a remarkable job. To win two national championships. Why? Because of the culture. Because he would draft guys that stayed 2, 3, 4 years.
That's right.
And all of a sudden now, he would have to get all of his boosters together, have to pay them off, and have to compete with all the blue-blooded teams. And I think at age 60, and he's the youngest age 60 I know, he didn't lose anything as far as I know. People are close, very close to Villanova. You know, he wanted to leave. Whether it was to be with his wife and family, and certain people did do that. We've seen that in sports. They just left to be with their family. Ray Dittiger right here, a guy I thought would never retire, just suddenly announced that he's leaving in June. And, you know, he's 75. He's entitled to leave. But, you know, it happens before. And maybe Jay just wants to be with his family. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. No question about it. I had thought, you know, about that. You know, he's 60 years old. Think about how much money he left on the table. I mean, he had a lifetime job. He's got two national championships. He's in the Hall of Fame, okay? People, he's a man of integrity, and he's not just coaching for the money by any stretch, but money's got to be some kind of factor. I don't know how much he made. I don't have that, but I can tell you this. He left. I mean, if he coaches another 10 years, right? Because he could have easily done it.
He could easily do it.
$70 million he left on the table. So there were rumors that there was something that wasn't talked about. Now, you know, there was, You know, I heard some crazy stuff.
Yeah, we're not even going to say it on the air. But there's the general categories are
what
somebody in his life has a health problem.
Right.
We don't know either him or somebody close to him. We don't know that. That's a rumor. It hasn't been verified.
Okay. Right.
Also, there's rumors that he wanted to jump to the NBA. That maybe he had a deal worked out. When the three teams that we heard about were the Knicks right here with Leon Rose, who's supposed to be a very close friend of his, Philly guy, the LA Lakers, obviously a premier team, and he's a Philly guy, but he's a Hollywood guy with the way he likes to dress. I mean, he's Pat Riley, he's the new Pat Riley. Everybody loves him. He's a golden haired child.
Yeah.
And of course here in Philly, he would be warmly embraced by as a season ticket holder. I would be just so thrilled. They would have people lined up around the block for season tickets if Jay Wright came here. He would infuse excitement, and he's our guy. But and the other rumor is maybe the truth is what he said was he wants to spend more time with his wife and kids, and that may well be true. And his wife might have leaned on him just like Tom Brady. I think it's clear that his wife leaned on him to retire, and I think he pushed back. And guess what? He's not retiring anymore. Well, that same thing, it could be that.
Well, I look at Jay Wright, and I still think I think college basketball recruiting is a lot easier than college football because you're only recruiting like in a class, like maybe four guys at most to a new class. And college basketball goes from pretty much September to March to early April, and you have the summer months to still be with your family. And with Villanova, I'm sure that Jay Wright can spend time with his family, and I think that you could do both. And it is so surprising because he was headed into the peak of his powers where he was really figuring out how to win in the NCAA tournament. He struggled his first 10 years. He was great in the regular season, but he never figured out how to win in March. And now you look at Coach K and Roy Williams leaving the game, and Jay Wright was a perennial powerhouse at Villanova and could have won even two more championships and could have been, unfortunately for Jay Wright, I think he maybe needed two more championships, maybe seven more years of work, and we would look at him with Wooden. We would look at him with Coach K and guys of that ilk. And Jay Wright is still going to be a Hall of Fame coach, but he could have been one of the greatest coaches in basketball history.
Greatest college coaches.
Yeah, I would say greatest college coaches.
But it still remains to be seen whether he's going to emerge. I don't see him emerging going back to college to another university.
No way.
I just don't see it. And in fact, he's made a statement. He said he's always been enamored with coaching the NBA. He literally said that within weeks of his departure.
Oh.
That's a sign, a signal to the NBA teams that he's willing to consider it. And look at Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl. He took a year off to regroup. And then he had his choice, and he figured he was from that Jacksonville area. He likes the area, and there's not a lot of pressure down there. And it's a great place, a good TPC golf course there, and not a lot of pressure. So it was perfect for Doug Peterson.
And you had Trevor Lawrence. But the thing is with Jay Wright, you know what it is, Doc, is that the Knicks are holding on to Tom Thibodeau, and Thibodeau had a step back this year, and he's not known to develop either. So maybe Jay Wright, in a nod to Villanova, he's going to let it be a year before he goes to the NBA because that's more classy than just jumping immediately from Villanova right to the NBA. You know what I mean?
Like for a five-year deal for $10 million, $50 million will do strange things to people. His brain might recover to hurry. Might be taking some Prevagen, some Alpha Lipoic Acid. All of a sudden, I'm back. I got the energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, money can change things. But the grace period for Villanova is important. And then some of these Herculean deals that we've seen in the NFL from a college coach. Like you had
Meyer, who was a college coach, went to the Jags. He had an inordinate amount of money in Jacksonville. It didn't work. John Gruden didn't make the playoffs his first 4 years. Then they discovered some things about Coach Gruden off the field. That experiment did not work either. So paying the coach large amounts of money, when has it worked in pro sports, giving the bag and offering an extreme amount of money to a college coach in a professional setting? When has it really worked?
I get it.
Nick Saban didn't work either. So,
well, listen, I think it has worked. Nick Saban has been excellent. He was in the national championship.
Not Miami,
last year.
Not the Miami Dolphins.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
When you pay a coach, any coach $10, $12 million for them to leave television or college for them to enter in the professional sports, when has it worked?
But I agree with you, I Spence, but that doesn't mean it's going to stop. And so having said that, I think Jay Wright, man, it would be unbelievable. I would love to see him get that Sixers job. I think we need, we need to have a whole new, situation. We need to revamp, I believe, our bench. And, of course, having leadership, the coach at the head coach spot, if Doc gets sent to Los Angeles. If Doc gets traded to Los Angeles – I cannot think of a better scenario for Jay Wright to come in. I mean, he would get so much
support. Fantastic.
Wouldn't even have to move. By the way, guys.
Exactly, you're right.
Quick question.
Yep.
Did anybody hear that Nick Foles got signed today or yesterday or today by the Indianapolis Colts?
I did hear that, and it's interesting because he's reuniting with Frank Reich.
Yep.
And it's funny because obviously Carson Wentz had a lot of success here before he blew out his knee. And then things went bad, and Wentz, the way he departed, if we think about it, he departed, he went silent in the media, he basically disappeared.
He was one of those guys.
He's on the dog list, and to his credit, he never said anything bad about the city, he never dissed the city, but all of his minions basically said he's not coming back, and there's only one team that he wants to go to, and that's the Colts. So, you know, how he did, you know, we got to give him credit where credit's due. He got, you know, three draft picks for Wentz. And it turns out Wentz may never, just the way Simmons may never play again, I don't believe Wentz will ever be as good as he was before he blew out his knee.
Well, the difference is with quarterback play, though, Doc, is that when you're a quarterback, you got to be able to do certain things where Ben Simmons could still be a defender, he could still be a utility guy like an Andrew Wiggins and still be a success. But Doc, I know you wanted to talk about Wentz. Here's what I'm going to ask you. Do you think that the Eagles coaching staff, much like Indianapolis, that they saw Wentz in practice and were kind of horrified by his decline in play, so that Howie Roseman, that the Jalen Hurts thing, they knew they wanted to move on from him even before the Jalen Hurts draft?
Well, it's interesting. And let me just wrap up that. You're right, Bruce. We got to throw Carson Wentz on that list. We got to, we have, I believe, Markelle Fultz, of course, Ben Simmons. And I'll throw in Scott Rolen at the end, and of course, Eric Lindros at the end when he left.
The way that him and Bobby Clark is the most revered hockey player to ever set foot in this city to this day. And the fact that those two had a complete meltdown, just like T.O. and McNabb, it was just as bad.
Absolutely.
And him and his dad, his meddling father, Lindros' meddling father, the way he left was horrible, left a terrible taste in our mouth.
Right. So
he's on the list.
Spence, what was your question again?
Well, actually, if we're going to go back, at least Markelle Fultz, personality-wise, was different. But I'm talking to you about Carson Wentz.
Yeah,
do you think that Howie Roseman saw the decline of Wentz and there was underlying rumors in the organization before the Jalen Hurts draft? Because what you saw with Indianapolis with Frank Reich, it's just so stunning that Frank Reich, who worked with Carson, would dump him in a year like that.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I think Peterson himself saw. I think that Peterson made the switch to Hurts. Okay, and at the end, I mean, and I don't think Peterson was at that time was planning on leaving the Eagles. And I guess there comes a time if you're the head coach and you have a situation like that where you say, well, it's either me or him. If I leave him in, because he, there were series where he was, missing guys, like on swing passes out of the backfield. Wentz was hit, literally throwing the ball into the ground. So it was almost like he had the yips at times. And so I think that he certainly, I think Peterson made that decision. Of course, I don't think he did it without Howie, or Jeff Lurie. But I will say that was the situation. One of the things that I read today, okay, and it's a shame because Foles, I think what happens is, I mean, Philly's is, he just plays well here, okay? And he played the greatest game in the history of Super Bowls for especially a man in his position. I mean, it was, that game, and I think Bruce, you and I, and I know Spence does, but in our lifetime, we've been around, I'm 57, and I just, I had to see once, just one time minimum. I want to see it again, but that parade down Broad Street of green, right?
We've always talked about fans' interference.
That's right.
We spoke about that for years.
That was your line.
And you finally saw the sea of greed down Broad Street. That was your line. That was your tagline.
I needed it for my soul. And near the and Foles will never buy a beer in this town. But I heard something interesting today. I guess it was in the Daily News. I don't know if you read the article, but they were talking about the Eagles had thought about Foles coming in. Like signing Foles, and this year, and they didn't because of Minshew, but also, and this was the best, this was as good a reason as I could think of, even though I don't like it, because I'll put him, I'll start Foles right now. I mean, I think they have to, over half the city would, you bring Nick Foles back here.
Bring Nick Foles back, it would be like bringing Jay Wright as a coach.
That's right.
The same thing, because but this guy is so beloved. That we'd be able to handle negativity.
But here's what happened
in his play. Actually,
no doubt. But here's what happened.
What happened there? I didn't read that article. I saw the headline and I went on to stick a needle into somebody's spine or something. I don't know what I did.
Yeah, but they said something interesting, and this is what they said. They and I couldn't believe how honest they were. They were concerned that if Hurts went into a slump, the pressure it would put on him having Nick Foles behind him, and the controversy, it would immediately start. Now, I feel bad for Foles because he that was the same exact situation, in Philly. In other words, he's so beloved, okay, that it's an automatic quarterback controversy when Wentz started, playing poorly the next year after we won the Super Bowl. He signs with Jacksonville for a boatload of money, so you can't blame him. But my point is, he belongs in Philly as a backup quarterback, and somebody could go in, but they just won't do it. And I'm a Hurts fan. I like him. I want to see the kid do well. He's a Philly type of guy. Say that. Did anybody see when that in Washington when the gate fell over and he jumped in there?
He was amazing. He was helping people out.
I think he's a man's man. I love him to death. But I would love to have Foles behind him, because what a safety blanket that is.
But what do you think, Spence? You're more of a national guy. Spence, he's less biased.
You pointed out in your argument that the pressure on Hurts would ratchet up, right?
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. If I'm Nick Foles, I have a perfect reputation in the city of Philadelphia, and it's like a chapter in your life that was just perfect.
Perfect.
It was almost like you went to college, and it was.
So you
like,
don't want to come back and ruin it.
You don't want to ruin it in any way. He won the Super Bowl. He then had the playoff moment the next year. I think with Philadelphia, he loved his time, but he's just experiencing his own path. And that's what I think.
I guess it's like the movie Good Will Hunting when Will says, he has one good date and then he immediately doesn't call because it's perfect, right?
I think that for the backup quarterback, I mean, we have Minshew, and then me and Bruce, I got a chance to actually talk to this undrafted kid that they got named Carson Strong. They got this kid at undrafted quarterback. He was kind of limping around his senior year, but he has a lot of talent as a guy that can maybe develop. So that quarterback room is full. But I look at Foles, and guess what? I just think it's too big of a media circus. And you already have the emergence of AJ Brown. You already have a lot of buzz that's positive. Again, it's just I think it's unnecessary a little bit with Nick Foles.
It's interesting though. Who was the? Oh my God, BYU quarterback. His brother won the Heisman.
The Detmer twins.
Funny story about that. So you got Coy Detmer. Now, it's all in the lines of what Spence said. So, Coy had some nice runs here. So all of a sudden, it's Reggie White night, okay? It's Reggie White night at the Link, okay? And we're playing Seattle, okay? And they're retiring Reggie White's jersey at halftime. His family's there. We're losing like 35-0 at halftime. We end up losing to Seattle like 42-14, something crazy. And, of course, halftime comes, and Jeffrey Lurie and everybody get booed, but they all stayed for Reggie's family, and that was great. So at one point, everybody's cheering for Coy. He's a backup quarterback. One thing leads to another, and Coy comes in. Just along the lines of what Spencer's saying. Coy comes in, first play, gets hit, ball gets run, pops up. Interception, touchdown, second play. I mean, they booed him like senselessly. So, in other words, you know, it could be a short honeymoon. I don't ever think that would ever happen with Foles, but it's a good example of what
you're
talking about.
It happens with older guys. And
we are going into the break. We are Rover Sports, and we'll be back.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
During COVID-19, many people are struggling to pay rent, and some have been threatened with eviction. However, remaining in your apartment during this difficult time should never subject you to sexual harassment.
My landlord told me my rent would be free if I gave him something in exchange.
Being pressured for sexual favors by anyone associated with your housing is not only wrong, it is against the law.
My leaky faucet turned into the maintenance man asking, when are we going to get to know each other better?
The Fair Housing Act protects you from sexual harassment during COVID-19 or any other time, including landlords canceling or reducing rent in exchange for sex, or someone refusing to make repairs because you deny sexual favors. If this happens to you, you can stop it.
So I called HUD and filed a complaint against my building manager.
Fair housing. The law is on your side. To learn more, visit HUD.gov/fairhousing. If you fear for your safety, call 911. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Serving my country required sacrifice. Sacrifice that changed my life forever. I remember the day I came home. Because of my injuries, this house wasn't right for me anymore. I remember the narrow doorways, the small bathrooms, the shelves out of reach when in my wheelchair. Every day was full of obstacles. I felt trapped. I remember a better day, the day my family received a specially adapted custom home from Homes for Our Troops. That day changed everything. Now we have a safe and accessible home to enjoy the freedom I fought for. This place, our home, is exactly what we needed to rebuild our lives.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post-9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
It's easier than you think for pests to threaten your family's health. Ticks, which spread dangerous diseases, hide in tall grasses and even on your pets. Rodents easily invade your home, contaminate food, and can carry more than 35 diseases. Mosquitoes, which breed in standing water, transmit many diseases. Get the facts you need to protect your family at pestworld.org. It's that easy. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Welcome back in to Rover Sports. We're here with Joe Dougherty Jr., our dear friend from the Labor Show, from basically every attorney in Philly. They have remotes. Doc does the best job of hosting. He's got the best remote thing I've ever seen at Sonny Banks's and stuff we've done. We want to thank Michael Vito behind the glass for producing, as always.
Big Mike.
Spencer G, we want to thank Coach Dace for logging in and calling in. I know literally he's coaching varsity baseball, and Dr. Lewis is a keynote speaker at an event tonight. So it's just it's a busy night here. It's a busy Tuesday night in the city. But what I wanted to do is lead us into the NBA championship. That is the championship of the respective conferences, East and West. I was hoping for a more competitive Western Conference. I was hoping that the Dallas Mavericks would hold serve at home, and they just couldn't do it. And it basically wasn't a close game. The Golden State Warriors have been magic, and there is a game tonight at 9 o'clock, so I want to hear how you rate this game. What do you see tonight, Mavericks, Warriors? Do you see Dallas winning any games at home? Do they have anything left in the tank? And, of course, I want to hear Doc's view on that. Go ahead.
I think it's definitely a stay away. I mean, from a betting perspective, if you're going to lean one way, I would lean towards taking the Mavericks because Golden State already has three games and they might want to close it out game five at home. So Dallas could hit a barrage of threes tonight because they're not playing with a lot of pressure. Now, Dallas has already kind of admitted defeat, though.
Yeah, they did. They did.
In the words of Kidd and Luka Doncic,
yeah,
they did say, Joe Doc, that, you know, none of you guys in the media expected us to be here and your vacation was delayed because right. We're to this point and we're young. This is the beginning of the journey, not the end.
Yep.
And listen, this is great reps for our guys, but Golden State's a champion and we're just trying to get on our footing here in the conference final, basically saying that this series is a wrap.
Yeah.
So who knows if the Mavs want to go all the way back to San Francisco. But there's a possibility tonight that you could see a lot of threes hit and that Golden State might just think they have this in the bag. So Dallas has a chance to win this tonight, but unfortunately this series is all the drama's pretty much out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you saw Memphis and Golden State. I think one of the biggest surprises I can ever remember. First of all, these playoffs are so back and forth. And I agree, obviously, this series is over. Spence, I saw exactly what you saw when they were talking about, we're just rookies. We're just like when Luka Doncic said, I'm just learning. I'm 23 years old. That was him. And Jason Kidd said the same thing. This is just the beginning of the road. That was, in a sense,
yeah, that was
the sense
of throwing up the white flag, just saying we're not unrealistic. We don't expect to beat this team. And by the way, even if they privately feel that it's possible – for right now, they want to look like they're laying down. They're playing possum because they want to win this game, and it's a cliche in sports, one game at a time. But I think for pride, if they win this game at home, it would go a long
it
way for pride.
And that's what I'm saying.
You don't want to get swept.
It wouldn't surprise me if they won. The crazier things have happened during these playoffs. I've never seen anything like these playoffs where teams are, winning games by 25 and then losing games by 25 and then down by 30. You saw yesterday.
Terrible swings, especially Boston-Miami. That
I
series,
thought Boston was going to get crushed yesterday.
Every game is a blowout. In Boston, I was listening to the game on the radio. Boston was up like 24-4. There was a point where they were 1-for-20. I'm sorry, the Heat, obviously, were 1-for-20. Boston was doing everything right. And unfortunately, as a spectator, I like to watch close games because my team is eliminated.
Yeah.
And again, we could talk a little bit because we have Doc
but
here.
That's what you get when you get these seven-game series. And a lot of people mock the college basketball way, the tournament, because they say it's the worst way to decide in one game what could happen. Yeah. But come on, the one game is so great because in these series, a lot of times when you look back on it, the last 2 minutes, I mean, they're not this degree of blowouts, but a lot of times, even with the Sixers Heat, we can talk about blowouts, though. And we have the games, and we're just going to kind of roll over tonight.
You know,
that stuff is happening in the NBA.
I'll tell you, you can't take, and this, in my opinion, is in all sports, but you can't take the word momentum out of anything. Once momentum starts and guys are feeling the flow, and they're you know, like basketball specifically, you know, when you're hitting, you're hitting. And when you're not, you're not. It's in a lot of ways, when you know you got to hit your shots or the other team is going to do it. It reminds me of Tom Brady in a sense. When quarterbacks play Tom Brady, okay, they feel like they have to play a perfect game, okay? And then they pull the string a lot. And that happens a lot. And by the way, they're right. They do have to play a perfect. So in basketball, it's not much different. And, you know, once the team gets tense and the other team's got the flow, and I'll say it in generalities, because in these playoffs, man, I've never seen anything like it in my life. You don't have to go any farther, than Miami and Boston. I mean, each going back and forth, I thought it was over. I thought they blew them out, like Miami blew them out in Boston. Now all they got to do is win one more and go home, and they get smoked, and I mean smoked bad. So, I mean,
it is crazy. Well, I guess one point I want to introduce about the finals is I want to make the Tom Brady analogy for Steph Curry. The Warriors, and I'll make the analogy to the New England Patriots. You have Draymond Green and Steph Curry, and you're being coached by Steve Kerr. You could get a guy like Andrew Wiggins, a Looney, guys like that, even an Andre Iguodala, who was basically, I was so happy to see him leave this town, because Andre Iguodala was never going to be a number one player. He always missed shots. He missed free throws.
Right.
He didn't seem like a leader. He seemed like he was aimless.
Right.
And then he goes to a place with a culture
where
of
it can
the Warriors,
be complimentary.
And he became an MVP. So I believe that Steph Curry is the Tom Brady. And the way he played it the other night in Dallas, he is the best ball handler, an amazing passer, and the best shooter of the basketball ever. And you've got Draymond Green, and he knows his place. He doesn't even shoot the ball. You don't even notice him. Well, you do, but you don't. He doesn't have to shoot the
leadership.
Ball. But the leadership there, and every day. One night it was Looney in Dallas. No, it was in San Francisco, that second game. Looney, you don't even think about, had 20 points and 10 rebounds. And then Andrew Wiggins, who I thought when he was in Minnesota, I thought of him as a dog. Basically, Jimmy Butler called him in towns out as complete dogs, heartless guys, soft as baby powder. And I saw him jamming the ball and posterizing guys. And I think it's the culture. So I really believe we're not here to do predictions of, but ultimately, I just don't know who's going to. I don't think anybody's being the Warriors, because I believe Steph Curry is magic. He is magic. He's Tom Brady.
Go ahead. I agree with you. And this whole system that is created, where you have Draymond Green, who's the 6'8 guy that is always setting screens, that doesn't look to shoot and just has such a natural feel for the game. You then have Klay Thompson, who's one of the top three best shooters of all time. You have Steve Kerr, that's brilliant, that played on the Dynasty Bulls, that was a part of championships with the Spurs, and he's one of the most brilliant basketball coaches of all time. He might even be a top five coach right now in all of NBA history. He's that impressive as an offensive coach and as a coach. And Steph Curry, to me, Joe, Doc, watching him just glide with the ball, shoot from anywhere, the defense has to respect Steph Curry out from 30 feet, because he can shoot from 30 feet. Both hands, he can finish off the glass with both hands. He knows all the angles to making layups. It seems like Steph Curry is the most naturally gifted basketball player in terms of the way that he plays the game. I'm not talking about as an athlete. I'm talking about ball handling. And I think he is very strong and is a tremendous athlete. The body control.
You ever watch him when he doesn't have the ball?
He's moving.
He's just in motion. You know, you look at these playoffs.
The whole team is in motion.
Oh yeah, I mean that team. And by the way, once Klay Thompson starts hitting, and he has been hitting, it's a scary thought. Okay, but you know when if we're talking about the playoffs, let's look at Boston and let's look at Al Horford. Mother of God. Okay, this guy, but he played for the Sixers.
He couldn't do anything. He would look like he was 50.
I was so happy to have him, though, because he beat the crap out of us every time we played Boston. So now we got him. I don't care what happens. Don't let him go. Now he's back in Boston. You would think he's like a seven-year player.
He scored 30 points in a game, the most ever.
You know what
it is? Because he's back in Boston.
He's back at home. But he also doesn't have to play next to Embiid, so he can be the natural center. He can play his style of basketball.
But you know when it all turned around?
Giannis
got in his face. When you know, and that was, holy cow, man.
Well, you know, Horford is a guy from the Dominican Republic. He's the nicest guy in the world.
Oh,
but when I saw him and Giannis going at it,
Giannis made the gargantuan mistake.
He jabbed it right in Giannis's face, and I've never seen. He stood there and glared at me. I can't forget that.
And Joe, I know you hate all Boston teams, but you have to admit Al Horford and Smart are tough guys to hate.
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen.
You could respect him, but not like him. Yeah, right,
listen. I could tell you know what, it's a funny thing you mention that when you look at Larry Bird and you watch YouTube and you see all the players talking about him and you really, you know, you're like, wow, that's awesome in the dream team. And I'm a big fan, but of course when back in the day, I couldn't stand him. Right. Of course. Oh. I mean, Dr. J versus Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. Yeah, they were great.
They were chippy team. Like, McHale's not a likable player, Kevin McHale.
No, and I didn't like
it. Guys like Cornbread Maxwell. What a jerk that guy was. Even the chief, you know, Robert Parrish, he was still annoying because he wasn't on our team.
But if they're guys
on our team, we would love them.
Right.
And in fact, I find myself, Doc, have you seen this winning time with the LA Lakers?
In other words,
I find myself, and it's so well done, I find myself really rooting. I root for the Lakers in that show. But when I was actually real time, right. I hated the Lakers.
Them, right?
I hated them.
I mean, I
hated
think,
both.
You know, when you think of that series, and I remember, and Bruce, I know.
You and I remember it. It's our era.
I know that Spencer remembers this. During that seventh game, when Magic hit the hook. Now, Spencer was never born.
It was like negative 10.
I thought that was
negative 10.
Boston.
He's going to be bored in 10 years after that.
Right.
Negative 10.
But he is a student of history.
No,
well,
I know.
I've seen Magic hit that sky hook. Oh, I mean, you've seen that on the
replay. Never forget it, though. We had it. Like, Kareem was done. We're like, we got this.
We thought we had it.
Magic Johnson. Comes out and scores, 42 points, something nuts, 15 rebounds, whatever it was. But to tell you, but right now, and when you look at history, like you guys are saying, like you're saying, Spence, yeah, I'm a massive Magic Johnson, Larry Bird fan, and all that, but when they played, couldn't stand him. So when you talk about Boston, you're right. Tatum, yes, I can't stand him when we're playing us. I apologize. Horford and Smart, but also Tatum. Sticks it right to my craw because – of Markelle Fultz. Can you believe that, man?
That's like a lifetime
that's going to keep us down for decades.
And it is kind of like Justin Jefferson because these players are so close to be drafted.
Jalen Rager will always be associated with Jefferson. Markelle Fultz will always be associated with Tatum. And what I've heard recently, Doc.
And it's not their fault, but they are.
What I heard recently, and it made it maybe 1% better, is that Boston, they knew, in other words, there's a thing in the NBA where we signaled to them that we wanted Fultz. So they wouldn't have let us have Tatum. So, everybody said, well, if we would have just chosen, we jumped up there. But I believe they wouldn't have made that trade if they knew we wanted Tatum. And I'm hoping that
But guess what? If you're sly enough, you can lie. You can always lie and say we want Fultz.
I heard at that level.
Take Tatum.
At that level, they're at the top. It's not a surprise.
You have me
the
on
agents,
record.
Everybody knows it. And so that made me feel maybe this much better that the Celtics were always taking
him,
Tatum.
Right. Well,
but they snookered us. Because you really want Markelle Fultz? You want him? Sure. But you got to trade your first-round pick to move up. Or we might take him. But they wanted Tatum all along, and I kind of believe
that. Well, there was Josh Jackson, if you remember, in that class. I mean, I did want
Josh
Tatum.
Jackson's nothing.
The problem with the Sixers, I did want Tatum. The reason they really took Fultz is because of Ben Simmons, because we already had a 6'10 wing, so we wanted a 6'4 off-ball point guard. And that's why it was the fit. It was the fit of Markelle was considered to be perfect.
But again, Fultz, look at it. Fultz and Simmons. We could look at Nerlens Noel. We could look at Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah,
who was
second pick in the draft.
Duke, second pick in the draft. Who looked great at Duke. These are real dogs. And one we haven't mentioned yet was
Carter Williams.
The pick from Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges' mother worked
for the
Sixers.
Sixers.
Exactly. We said that in unison. And the fact we got rid of him for Zaire Smith, and that guy, not only is he not in the NBA, Zaire Smith can't even play the G League. So look at Bridges is an all-star player. So this ownership group with Josh Harris and this group, and we can look at the Colangelos. We can now look at you know, it's just the same thing.
Well, I'll
just
ask Doc this.
When you have terrible personnel picks for 6, 7, 8 years, eventually you're not building a championship team.
Do you think it's karma for the way that the Sixers went about the picks and the tank?
You say karma?
Karma for tanking, for purposefully losing.
What do you think, Joe?
That's an interesting point. It's a very interesting point. And I think that, you know, it's very possible, definitely very possible. The other thing is this. I think you need to be able to get those mid-first-round draft choices. Look, what was Luka Doncic? What was it? What pick was he?
Luka was actually – he was the third pick, I believe, in
third
this draft.
Pick
and the Atlanta Hawks traded they traded that pick away to acquire Trae Young in that draft. Yeah. So they could have had Luka. Actually, Marvin Bagley from Duke was the second pick to the Kings, and then the first pick was Aiden to the Phoenix Suns. But people were worried about Luka playing overseas. Like, was he a little bit soft as a 6'8 guy? And he was the third pick in that draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to be able
what
to...
What an amazing pick he was. Oh, what a tremendous player.
And Dallas made out great. And Luka's better than I even thought he would ever be.
Well,
to be honest with you,
you know, but I'd rather
have Luka than Aiden. Aiden's a good, really good player, but Luka is a franchise player.
Oh yeah.
And Marvin Bagley, where is he now? Is he on the Kings?
Marvin Bagley is.
He might be on the Kings.
He got traded to the Pistons. Oh, actually.
Okay. He was on the Kings. He was a terribly underperforming guy.
Underwhelming. Sure.
And the Sixers could have almost got him as a throw-in with the Kings,
Bruce,
if you remember
but
that.
You know, I'll tell you what I do remember on Fans Interference. We brought in you had the kid from the Philly kid who Hank Gather's buddy. Hank Gathers passed away, and they went to
Kimble. We had Bo Kimble.
And I
asked,
I'll never forget asking him, and I did it on purpose, and his answer was very on point, and that was, can you get drafted by the wrong team? You know, in other words, and he said, well, you're looking at
he
somebody.
He got drafted by the Clippers, and it was the wrong team for him.
And he said,
when Donald Sterling was in charge. I remember that.
Remember he said, they didn't want me to play, they didn't want me to have my bonus, so they made sure I didn't play. I mean, like it was.
It happens.
So a lot of players get, getting into the right situations, and some players get into the wrong situation. So a lot of these guys going to Sacramento and some of these really downtrodden franchises, they'd never get a chance to develop. You know, I mean, you mentioned the kid from Duke and Bagley. And I just say that because, I wonder how many of these players actually just get in the wrong situation and never get developed properly.
Well, that's true. And again, the knock on Doc Rivers, which I believe, is that he doesn't develop the players. Jalen Springer was a first-round draft pick. You didn't see him at all. You saw him in the blowout, like in garbage time. You don't see him. And again, Maxey, the only exception is, if Ben Simmons was here, Maxey wouldn't have been able to play.
Right.
They were forced into using Maxey because by necessity, and it turns out he was great. But I see that just the way Doc's posture is, you know, with Paul, B-ball Paul, and with Charles Bassey, these young centers, they brought in DeAndre Jordan, who had nothing.
Yeah.
And it took a while for Doc to realize that. But Doc is a guy who doesn't develop young talent, and that's one of the many reasons that I want to see him gone.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's gonna be a long rebuild. It's gonna be a very tough rebuild because of the contracts.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, I want to thank everybody tonight. This 90 minutes went really fast. I want to thank everybody for logging to Rover Sports. I want to thank Joe Docherty, our guest tonight. I want to thank Mike Vito, our producer, did a spectacular job. And actually, great lighting here. I thought I was doing something great. I brought some great lighting here, and I can't beat what you have here already.
Tremendous.
I want to thank
lighting.
Spencer, my partner in crime. And as always, I want to say good night and good sports.